Okay, next is it. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and kind, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise should later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
I was just having a discussion with somebody overseas on Sunday, and they've been meditating during this COVID time. They've reconnected with their old university group, but they were finding that their meditation was a bit flat. You know, they do their 20 minutes every day, but it wasn't, their mental states haven't been very good. So I was explaining to them things like the five hindrances and different skillful means to be more present through the day. Because if we just kind of let our meditation go cold, then every time we come back to meditate again, like, we have to start that whole process all over again. So, like I've said before, you know, you make little times during the day where you, where we can actively be more mindful, like, okay, now's the time to make a cup of tea and be totally present, and or now the time I'm driving the car, you know, I'm going to try and give up thinking and just be with the driving, or whatever the activity you choose. So then throughout the day we have little periods where we're learning to be more present, where we're not just, you know, following after the moods of the mind. And as I was saying to him, it's a bit like, and mine's a bit like a 3-year-old child. And, you know, it comes up to you and it says, I want candy, I want candy, I want candy. And if we always react to it, then you know, it's never gonna get the picture that you can't just always want things. And so when we come to meditate, we're setting up a wall for our mind. We're saying, okay, now's the time where we're not going to just follow randomly after thinking, where we're not going to, you know, the mind can't just eat candy as much as it wants. It has to have an opportunity to be restrained, to renounce what it usually does. And so the mind doesn't like that. And so that's why, you know, we can feel a bit down, because, you know, our mind isn't getting what it wants. But we have to see that the part of renunciation is just learning some restraint. That just like if you don't give a child any barriers, boundaries, then, you know, eventually they're going to be really a handful. And our mind is the same. So the difference is we've already let our minds do whatever it wants for most of our lives. And if you're Buddhist, then you believe in past lives and many, many lives. And so we have very, very strong conditioning where the mind will, you know, we're just used to letting it think what it wants. And so when we come to meditate, the reason why a lot of people don't like meditating is because they're confronted with this mind that's kind of full of all of these thoughts. But as one teacher, Ajahn Dunn, said, somebody asked him, oh, what happens if, you know, you meditate for 20 minutes and then you're just thinking for 18 minutes? And then he said, well, at least you had 2 minutes of peace. So, you know, lower the expectation, you know. So the idea is, and as I've said previously as well, focusing on good things in our lives, like learning to be generous, learning to speak the truth, like learning things about integrity. So then we can attach to those things as something that's worthwhile in our lives. So then we have a kind of a rudder of who we are as a being, that we're attached to good actions and integrity. And I think a lot of the reason why people get depressed in this world is they don't have a sense of who they are. They don't have a foundation that they feel they can stand upon. And so as we start to attach to goodness, doesn't mean we have to get conceited over these things, but it just gives us a foundation, gives us something to identify with. And then because we know what to identify with, we know what to avoid. And sometimes that can mean changing the people and the things we associate with as well. Like a friend of mine, I think they used to always watch horror films, and then wondered why they were having panic attacks. And I pointed out to them, well, maybe it's what you're watching. So it's like, you know, what we fill our time with is important in life. So I remember when I different times when I was younger and I had depression, just going for a walk in the morning, being in nature. You know, very, very simple things. It's like sometimes we just get stuck in our own head, and then we think that that's, you know, we believe the stories of our mind, and then we think that everything is terrible. Well, we just see how we can adapt that situation to something more positive. Because the mind is the forerunner of all things. So if we, in a situation where we're allowing ourselves to think the same negative thoughts every day, then every day we're going to wake up and we're going to feel those same negative feelings. So we're just reinforcing the same story. So in order to change the story, we need to somehow change that process into something more beneficial. And, you know, it's interesting, like, you know, we're taught that there's five senses, But what about the mind? Now, isn't the mind like the most important sense of all? And we're just kind of taught that it's just a process unto itself. Well, that's in Buddhism, there's two types of dharma. There's like the dharma, which is just learning to be a good being, which is universal dharma. So that's like dharma of all religions, learning to be a good person, you know, learning to look after mother and father, learning to help the poor, learning to speak the truth, learning to be kind and gentle. This is like kind of universal dharma. And then there's also self-discipline, like, you know, learning to have, perfect the trade, for example, whatever job you do it well, you have industry, you have a sense of integrity in the things that you do. And so that, in Buddhism, that's like worldly dharma. And then the other form of dharma in Buddhism is more the dharma which is for purifying the mind. So we have this idea that there is greed, hatred, and delusion. And these are the unwholesome roots in the mind. So whenever our mind is caught up with something bad, it's associated with one of these three roots. So when you know, you go to eat a piece of chocolate and you eat half a block, well, that might be greed. And when an insect bites you and you squash it out of anger, well, you know, that's like hatred. And when you know you're meant to be doing something and then you block the thought out of your mind, well, that's delusion. So it's like these are things that are very natural to us because we've been involved with them unconsciously our whole lives. And so the opposite of that, so going against greed, that's one of the reasons we do meditation. It's learning to have equanimity and renunciation to the senses. So we sit down and we go, you know, I'm not going to follow after sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, thoughts. I'm just going to kind of be neutral and try and be with my meditation object. And so that's why usually when you learn breath meditation or something, it's just like counting the breaths or a simple mantra or learning to be with the feeling of the breath. And the mind might go off, you know, 100 times, and you bring it back, goes off, bring it back. But like anything, like a carpenter, you know, the first time they, or a turner, the first time they make a table leg, you know, it's not going to look very good. Unless they happen to be a very refined being, maybe it takes them 100 table legs before it actually starts to look like a table leg. And the same is like our meditation. We can't expect our meditation just to be amazing when we haven't put any causes in. And so I was talking about the 5 hindrances with him, and there's a simile that I really like. So basically, the purpose of meditation in Buddhism is to brighten the mind. So when the mind's going outwards into the world, then that's the mind is lost. But when the mind is kind of with the mind, then the mind is more luminous. It's not, the power of the mind isn't being dispersed into all sorts of things. It's centered in one place. And so that's not wisdom yet, but it's, at least that's the ability for peace, the cause for peace and joy to arise. And so that's the kind of basic state that we're aiming for eventually when we meditate. Though that's the result. You don't want to attach to results because, you know, you could be meditating and then 1 year your mind is just crazy for a whole year. So you have to always expect the unexpected and never attach to results. But that is the kind of result that does happen from this practice as the mind as you learn to gather the mind back into itself. So it's not going out wanting things. It's not going out being adverse to things. Kind of awake in the present moment, content with this meditation object. So that's the kind of purpose of meditation in the initial stages. And that's that power of mind will mean then that we can spread the mindfulness, our comprehension of what's actually happening in our body and mind throughout the day, the things that we're doing, our actions. Then that starts to wake up. So the result of the meditation is stronger mindfulness through the day. And the result of stronger mindfulness of the day means we start to be able to see our actions in even more minute detail. And then we can even start to follow up on our thought processes. And I did one activity some years ago where I was trying to give up, what's the word for it? Complaining. So I did this activity, I think it was for a month, where first I got rid of complaining out of my speech. I had like a tally system. I think it was about 15 times a day I was complaining at that point. And then slowly once I got that down to zero, and then I did a tally of my thoughts. And then that was about 15 times a day I was complaining in my mind. And then so eventually I got that down to zero. And that was in 2016. And then I did the same for gossip and other areas. So the idea is that once you have that strong mindfulness, you can actually even start looking at more refined areas of your mind and see, you know, where am I creating problems for myself? Because obviously, complaining doesn't really add any value to our lives. We're not like, it's not like constructive criticism, it's just complaining. it's a very destructive mental state. And even I was helping out with a computer project in the last year, and then at one point I started reading some news, and I realized how polarized these kind of things are, because they're feeding you an opinion, and they're trying to make you feel a certain way. So it's very kind of biased information. And then as a Buddhist monk, we're not meant to talk about things like that, because what if the person we were talking about rocked up at the monastery and asked for some help? And then, you know, you've just been saying what a terrible person they were. So it's like we're meant to more talk about the truth of, you know, how to live as good people. And so even the media, when you look at it, a lot of it is very kind of opinionated. And so it's good to be able to have to see these things and see, okay, so, you know, maybe I limit those kind of inputs because that's causing negative mental states in me. And for some reason in this life, I've never really been interested in news. So I've never really had that problem. But I can see how it is addictive. And the way that I used to get around it was to say, well, you know, back in the old days, you used to get the news once every 6 months when a ship came into harbour. So, you know, maybe every 6 months is a good idea that when you find out about what's overseas. And so then the simile of the hindrances. So these are the things that dull and blunt the mind. And so when either the mind is gathered in luminosity, peace, joy, factors of enlightenment, or it's in one of these five hindrances. And the five hindrances are sense desire. So the simile at the time of the Buddha, this simile I like because the average person's mirror at the time of the Buddha 2,500 years ago was a bowl of water. You know, they didn't have a lot of money. And so, you have a bowl of water and then you would look in the water at your reflection. So this simile is a bowl of water. And so sense desire is like when you add turmeric or, you know, some kind of dye to the water. You can still see the water, you can still see your reflection, but the color has changed. So this is like when we want things and we desire for things. It's not intrinsically bad, but it's just like it changes our perception. You know? So that's when we have sense desire. So and the opposite of sense desire is just renouncing. Just contentment and just renounce that desire, give it up, let go. And then anger. Anger is like when the water is bubbling. So you can't even see your reflection. It's just like this mass, like you've got a fire underneath it, and then all the water is bubbling up. And then the restlessness and worry. It's like waves and whirlwinds on the surface. That's when we're just, our mind is like when you have too much coffee or something, and you can't stop thinking stupid thoughts, or when you're worried about something and you can't stop yourself from worrying. And so the useful thing about these reflections is, rather than getting stuck in the story of the mind and believing it, you can just say, oh, this is just the hindrance of worry. This is just the hindrance of anger. You can depersonalize it and just see that it's a force that's taking hold of your mind. It's not you. It's just the process that is currently arising, and it'll sustain for a while, and then it will cease. So you don't have to... sometimes meditation can just be aware that this hindrance is grappling your mind. Like I remember once, as monks, we were allowed some tonics in the afternoon. And they're like, sugar and honey and things. And these days, they have all sorts of things, like bars of dark chocolate and lollies. And it's not really what the Buddha kind of meant when he had kind of tonics for sick people. And so I always try and avoid those things if I can. I remember one range retreat. My hut at the other monastery is about 15 minutes walk up to the main building. And my meditation was reasonable at the time, and then I remember this greed completely consuming my mind that I wanted some of these lollies. And then so I'm like this greedy octopus walking all the way up for 15 minutes, getting my lollies and then walking back. So it's like sometimes if you can't control your hindrance, you can at least be aware of it. So you try and expand your mindfulness and go, well, I'm being consumed by this hindrance. I can't do anything about it at the moment, but at least you try not to let go of your mindfulness. So then you have the power in the future to overcome it. So not ideal, but it's better than nothing. And then the next hindrance is like dullness and drowsiness, or sloth and torpor. And that's where when you sit down to meditate, you suddenly get tired. And then you realize it's time for dinner, and then suddenly you're awake again. So, or sometimes people meditate and you get very tired or sleepy. It's kind of like the algae and plants have grown over the surface of the water. So it's like you can't even see the water, you're just kind of consumed with this kind of sloth. So for that we just try and arouse energy. That's why sometimes I say the Buddha, the word Buddha means awake. So even saying awake as your mantra or something. So sometimes you can make your meditation based on the opposite of the hindrances in your mind. And then the last one is doubt. Apparently a lot of Westerners have a big problem with doubt. They meditate and, is this the right way to meditate? And did I get it right? And is this? And they have all these questions come up in their mind. So, and I think the simile for doubt, and the other one is like when you're stuck in a desert. So the opposite of doubt is when you cross the desert and you come to a land of safety. And so that just means just put down your doubts and do the practice. Just forget about it. There's no point doubting and questioning. And the only way we can work things out is by putting them into practice and seeing if they work. So we don't blindly believe in Buddhism. We're taught to actually try things out and then see for ourselves. We take things on board, but then we have to actually prove it for ourselves. Just thinking about these hindrances is a useful way of separating myself from those processes. And so that's basically what we're doing in meditation, is training the mind to overcome these things. So when the Buddha would teach the monks to meditate, you'd have the learning right action first, so the way that you walk and stand and having mindfulness through the day, and then perfecting the sila, so as I was saying before, like the right and wrong actions, learning what is right and wrong so we can be good people. And then the benefit of learning what is right and wrong is then that allows the mind to become bright. Because then you don't have any cause for the mind to feel bad. So it's like the And also it's meant to, like, heavenly beings really like people who are virtuous. So you also, when you're a really virtuous being, you get heavenly beings tend to look after you more as well, because they notice you, because they don't like the smell of people who do bad actions. But where people who do good actions have a more like a fragrant flower. So it's like these things have perceivable results. But we're not meant to be conceited by it as well and think, oh, I'm a good person and they're a bad person, and then you beat people up with your virtue. That's not the idea. No, we just do it as a foundation for the mind, just so we can be good and be blameless. When we're blameless, we don't have to worry. Usually I have a practice at the moment where I sit down once a day and I just check whether the actions and things that I've done are appropriate or not. Just a way of balancing my mind. And I'll go through all the basics of practice. Like I was saying, the virtue, and then also sense restraint. You know, have I been grasping at sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, thoughts? Have I been caught up in my mind, believing the stories of my mind? Because in Buddhism, it's like the past doesn't exist at the moment, because the present exists, the future doesn't exist. But in the past did exist, and the present and the future didn't. And in the future will exist, but the past and the present won't. So it's like the ideas that we get stuck in our head, you know, we can learn from the past and plan the future at the appropriate time, but all the thoughts that we have about them, as if they're real, that's just delusion. You know, they're not actually real. We can't go back and fix the past. We can't go into the future and do anything about it. All we can do is be good people right here in the present. And then the final thing I said to him, because he was saying that he was having a lot of thoughts, you know, couldn't stop them, is a useful practice is, because our minds are like three-year-old children, then having like a boundary. So you just say, okay, if you've got a difficult thing to think about, it, just say, okay, 4 o'clock on Friday, I'm going to think about this thing. You know? So then your mind will tell you 100 times before 4 o'clock on Friday that you have to think about it. And every time you say, no, 4 o'clock on Friday, I'm going to think about it. And 4 or 5 or 6 o'clock comes on Friday and you remember you're going to think about it. Then you sit down and you give it 100% of your attention and think about it for half an hour and make up a decision. But that way we're not following that tendency of the mind to always question itself. You know? And because that just loses the power of our mind. Our decisions end up being meaningless because one day we think one thing, one next day we think another. And then with that strength of mind, we can start to reflect on our actions. You know, before we do an action, while we're doing an action, after we do an action, was it appropriate? You know, how could we have done it better? And then so all of that, that's then the foundation for meditation. So then when we come to meditate, you know, we know about our actions, we know about who we are, we have a foundation. Then we just do the practice. We don't have to worry about it then. So it's just about putting the causes in, not worrying about results. Whether we get peace or whether we don't get peace, none of that matters. You just see that we're doing this as a way of training the mind. And then if we have that kind of attitude, then because we want to do it, then it's easy. It doesn't actually matter the process, you know, because we can just see, oh, okay, today I just had restlessness for my whole meditation. Well, maybe tomorrow will be different. Anyway, so that's the talk today. So we do a guided meditation. Just get yourself in a comfortable position. Feet in a comfortable position, back in a comfortable position, hands in a comfortable position. Just bring some kindness towards ourselves. Whatever's going on in our lives, just bring some kindness. Let things settle. And we put down the past. The past is gone. Put down the future and imagination. Future hasn't come. We can just let go of imagination. And come into the present moment. We have the body and the mind and the breath here in the present moment. Just have the idea that whatever happens in our meditation, we'll just be content with whatever arises. No judgment, no expectations. And start by relaxing the toes. Bring our awareness into the toes and into the feet. And relaxing them deeply. And if the mind ever goes off in the meditation, when it's ready, it will come back. So don't worry about it, we just have mindfulness. Relax the toes and the feet and the ankles. Relax the lower legs, spiraling up the lower legs to the knees. Relax the knees. And the thighs, spiraling up the thighs. Relax the waist and the weight of the body onto the seat. Relax the belly from inside out. And just become aware of the belly as it rises and falls with the breath. Very grounding. Some people watch the breath of the belly because it's very grounding. Kind awareness of the belly as it rises and falls. And just see how peace grows just a drip by drip. Belly rises and falls. Relax the lower back and sides, the middle back and sides, the upper back, and under the arms. All the muscles of the back and the spine, inside the spine. Relax the entire back. As comfortable and at ease. Above the belly, relax the diaphragm, solar plexus, the chest, the lungs. Become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. It's a natural process of an in-breath, the lungs filling up, and an out-breath, the wind of the lungs emptying. Being awake to one in-breath, awake to one out-breath. With a sense of friendliness. And to be friends with our experience, awareness of our experience. the lungs fill up and empty. Being alert but relaxed. Relax the shoulders. From the neck down to the heart. You might imagine a blue sky in the heart, stretching far and wide. So let go of any difficulties in the heart. It's like a blue sky, it's not even a cloud can be seen. Just let go of everything. Relax the shoulders. Deeply, letting go of all tension in the shoulders. Might droop a little. Relax the upper arms, spiraling down to the elbows, the lower arms, down to the wrists, palms of the hand, fingers, the fingertips. All relaxed. And from the neck to the chin, the jaw, the lips, the tongue down to the root, under the nostrils, the nose, the upper cheeks, under the eyes. You might notice a slight smile at the corners of the eyes. It's the smile of peace and contentment. Relax the eyelids and the eyes themselves. Deeply relax the eyes. So much tension, worry, anxiety can be held in the eyes. Just really take some time to relax them. The eyes are filled with peace and relaxation. Relax the eyebrows, the temples, and the forehead. All the lines of worry on the forehead vanish. The whole head, the whole body, just bring this relaxation and contentment. This alertness and friendliness. Whatever is good enough. Just bring our attention to the mind. Bring kindness. Friendliness to the mind. Welcoming. Allowing, being kind. We don't give our attention, enough attention to our minds. Now's an opportunity just to make peace. Now our body and minds are in a reasonable state. We bring our attention to the breath. Some people find it comfortable watching in the belly, some in the heart, some like following the breath in and out, some at the lip, some at the nostril. Just choose one that seems suitable to yourself and try it for the meditation. Just stay with the simple sensations of the breath coming in. You know the in-breath, the breath going out, you know the out-breath. This kind awareness. being friends with the in-breath and the out-breath, that the whole world would vanish. And we're content to be here right now. Content to be with the in-breath. Content to be with the out-breath. Welcoming our experience, content to be with the in-breath, content to be with the out-breath. Just notice the feeling, the texture of the breath. Tend to be with the in-breath. Tend to be with the out-breath. Any hindrances are arising, you just bring a friendly awareness to them. Content to be with the in-breath. Content to be with the out-breath. Sense of alertness, awakeness, of friendliness and kindness. Whatever our experience is good enough. Content to be with an in-breath. Content to be with an out-breath. I begin to notice the beginning, the middle, and the end of the in-breath. The beginning, the middle, and the end of the out-breath. contentment has like a natural joy and peace. It's very subtle. Content to be with the in-breath. Content to be with the out-breath. Welcoming and friendliness. Like a mantra, and say joy on the in breath and peace on the out breath. Decide for the next 5 minutes. Just stay with this friendliness and welcoming of meditation. Just keeping with the friendliness, the contentment, accepting whatever is, allowing, welcoming, being with an in-breath, being with an out-breath. Good enough. Give up all our expectations. Be content. Joy and peace of contentment grow slowly. And may we wish ourselves some equanimity and peace. May we be peaceful. May we be at ease. May we be equanimous. May we be balanced. May the light of equanimity suffuse our minds. We share this balance and equanimity with all beings everywhere, above, below, all around, seen and the unseen, all beings, including ourselves, we share this peace and ease. little chant on the other side. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtues, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, O virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana, in every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble Lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and illusion be dispelled.
A little blessing.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba buddhanubhavena sadha suti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba dhammanubhavena sadha suti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam, rakkhantu sabba devata, sabba sanghanubhavena sadha suti bhavantu te.
Thank you all for coming.